Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm really excited to be joined today by Kyle Winterbottom. Kyle's the founder and CEO of Orbition Group, an award-winning talent solutions business. They're based in Manchester and focus exclusively on scaling data, analytics, and artificial intelligence teams across the UK, Europe, and the USA. Kyle is also the founder and host of the Driven by Data community, which is comprised of three components: the roundtable, the podcast, and the mentorship. Really interested to learn more about all that. Kyle, welcome. Thanks for being here.
No problem at all, Mark. Thank you very much for having me. A pleasure.
Fantastic. So it's fun interviewing a fellow podcaster, and I can already see and hear that you've got a great setup there. So you were referred to me recently by Alex Cook, who's been on the show. And when he mentioned you to me, I was like, I know that name. And then I realized we were already connected on LinkedIn and had exchanged a few messages back and forth. But how do you know Alex?
So Alex, at one point in time, several years back now, used to report into me at a search business that we were both at. So I ran the practice, basically, and he was one of the very strong up-and-coming performers who's obviously gone on and done absolutely fantastic things in his own world. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, what a great guy. Really enjoyed my conversation with him very recently on the show, actually. So folks should definitely check that episode out. So, Kyle, how did you get into recruiting in the first place?
Oh, standard story, Mark, to be honest with you. So my background is, I guess I come from a sporting background. So I played professional sports at an early age, came out of that, went to university, ended up in the US on a soccer scholarship, came out of that, went into direct sales, came back to the UK, and the age-old story of, you know, applying for sales-related roles, was interviewing with a rec-to-rec and didn't realise it was a rec-to-rec, and then ended up joining S3, as many, many do. And yeah, that's how I fell into it, like many, I guess.
Fantastic. And yeah, a lot of entrepreneurs have come out of S3. So Kyle, you launched Orbition in 2020. Could you share your journey? And in particular, I'm interested in how successful you've been at creating a community and leveraging content marketing to really establish yourselves as an authority in the data and analytics space.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. So I think I was fortunate that where I'd worked before starting Orbition had given me, I guess, free rein, if you like, to maybe try something a little bit different in terms of approach. And, you know, that certainly helped me with the confidence of going into launching the business that, you know, there was a way I could be successful that was beyond the traditional, you know, hammering the phones, specking CVs, kind of flying through switchboards, et cetera, so 2020, you know, an opportune time for me. And I guess on a personal level, obviously the pandemic had hit, there'd been a bit of a slowdown with you know, recruitment from a big client base of ours, and it was a case of really we'd pivoted to start looking at other areas across Europe that maybe weren't as impacted or didn't seem as impacted at that time. And to be completely candid with you, it was a case of, well, you know, I'm starting to build something again from scratch, new market, you know, back to the drawing board of mapping the market, hiring managers on the system, so on and so forth. And I guess I'd always known that at some point in time I wanted to do this, and it just felt like if I'm going to do it, now is probably the right time. It was nearing the end of the year, and I kind of felt, you know, I've got about a quarter, 3 or 4 months to kind of really start to build something so that when the new year comes and hopefully, you know, lockdowns are lifted, I was in a good place to kind of, you know, kick on from there, really. So that was the kind of genesis of starting the business at that point in time. And I guess, you know, as I said, the whole kind of community concept and content marketing piece had really had a trial run, unbeknownst to me, in my former role, and had proved that it could work, and, you know, was a very successful mechanism of kind of creating brand awareness and visibility within that market, which obviously then, you know, helped me kick on when I launched my own business, because, you know, I guess the benefits were I was already fairly well known from doing that historically before, and I guess we've just taken it to a whole new level here.
Amazing. So could you just kind of like walk me through how that kind of evolved? So, you know, where in, I guess it was September 2020, and you're, you know, you've just opened the doors of your brand new business, Orbition. How did things evolve in terms of, like, was that the strategy from the very beginning to have this kind of community and content, you know, focused business, or like, what was the progression?
Yeah, absolutely. So the genesis of the start was that we were going to create communities and build awareness via content of the brand from the get-go. And as I said, I'd, you know, had a bit of success with that previously. Obviously, we were still in a very strict lockdown at that point, and we didn't end up getting out of that lockdown until April 21, basically. I think where I was previously, I had a, you know, I was looking after a geographical region, as far as, you know, the former business. So I had some fairly strict kind of restrictions on what I could and couldn't do. So I just, you know, took myself out of that. Obviously, being based in Manchester, I ran the north of the UK and certain parts of Europe. So I did what anyone would do and kind of focused on the south of England and basically replicated the kind of community and content approach specifically to that audience and that market that I'd done in my former role, that was more, I guess, you know, focused and targeted towards the kind of big cities in the north of England, effectively.
Help me just really understand what was going through your mind at that time. Like, was it literally you said to yourself, okay, I'm instead of, you know, chasing leads and marketing candidates, I'm going to launch a podcast and host events? Or like, what did that really involve on a practical basis when you were just, you know, launching the business?
Yeah, so I think as I said, I you know, I'd had almost a trial run at this before, right? So in my former role, we created a community that was very, you know, north of the UK centric. Out of that, then we started hosting events, and I began to see during that period of time that actually, you know, if we're creating these communities, we're putting on these events, we're all about adding value first, that then creates relationships. The kind of work just naturally came from that. So we kind of took the exact same approach. I'd already actually launched a podcast at the previous place that we got about 15 episodes into. So again, I'd already probably had a bit of a trial run at that. So yeah, you know, the doors opened middle of September. By the middle of October, we'd launched the podcast. Obviously, we were still in lockdown, so events weren't as forthcoming as obviously they are now. But yeah, you know, I guess the whole premise was very simply, let's create a community of people who will ultimately be potential target customers and buying clients. Let's add a load of value to them. And, you know, from there, that'll create relationships that then, you know, I guess the whole premise really, Mark, is give value, give value, give value. And then you almost put yourself in, you know, plain sight and I guess almost have the opportunity then to ask the question right around how do we work from you. And I guess what's transpired over the last 3 years is that practically all of the revenue that we've made, which has been, you know, a fairly significant amount, has come inbound to us through those communities, through that podcast, through the content, you know, through being really visible, et cetera, really.
It's incredible. So I think you shared to me on our previous conversation that pretty much 100% of your business has been inbound. Did I catch that right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's, for a lot of listeners, that's going to absolutely blow their mind because it is so different to the way that most recruitment businesses operate. So I'm really keen to pick your brains on this and understand, you know, the sort of roadmap you followed. So I guess what you're saying is within a month of launching, you already had started your podcast. And how did things progress from there?
Yeah. So I guess we, you know, we're targeting people that we knew. It's one of them, Mark, you know, right? You run a podcast. So at the start, you're effectively selling a concept and an idea of what the future version of this podcast will become, right? I guess now we're in a completely different place, right? Where we have, you know, almost 35,000 listeners in 147 different countries. We're monetizing the podcast via sponsorship. And as you know yourself, right, the more listeners you get, the more accolades you get, the better the guests you get, the more listeners you get. And it becomes a kind of self-fulfilling cycle at that point. So we'd started out with, you know, targeting people that we felt would, you know, allow us to come across as credible, that were people of, you know, influence and seniority within that marketplace who had something to share. As I said, I was very fortunate that I had a lot of connections from being in this market for a long time that were, you know, willing to give me their time. And to be honest with you, neither myself nor them probably thought the podcast would turn out to be what it has become, in all candidness, right? And I guess it's just evolved from there. So the events were the kind of starting point of what I'd always done. So I started hosting data analytics leadership events in 2018. Obviously, I had a trial run with another podcast in my former role. So when it came to launching Orbition, you know, we kicked that back off again pretty much from the start. And since then, it's always been a case of, well, how do we continue to grow and develop and innovate on that? Because ultimately, you know, when I first started doing events, very few recruitment companies were hosting events, and even fewer were doing it in the sphere of data analytics, right? Same when I started the podcast, very few recruitment companies were doing podcasts. Now everyone's doing events, now everyone's doing podcasts. So the next iteration of that kind of community that we were trying to build was this mentorship program. Now I see loads of other recruitment companies having a mentorship program. So I've always been very conscious of how do we stay ahead of the curve, but whilst also trying to, you know, maintain almost number one status in each of those categories around putting on the best events possible with the best people, that people keep coming back and people, you know, are kind of clambering to be in. Same with the podcast, same with the mentorship program, et cetera, really. So, yeah, the podcast has become a bit of a household name, which obviously helps us. I guess the whole community concept, really, if you kind of relate it back to 100% inbound revenue, that doesn't mean that we haven't instigated some of those relationships. You know, we will purposely go and target people that can add a lot of value to that community, who are also people of power and influence within the market, who we, you know, at some point in time would probably like to have a conversation with about how they do their recruitment and staffing and search, right? But ultimately, once they're in that community, it allows us to nurture those relationships. It allows us to add continuous value to them. And more often than not, what happens, whether it's 2 weeks, 2 months or 2 years, at some point in time, they typically come to us because we've built that relationship with them. The content marketing piece really kind of runs parallel to that and kind of just reinforces that we are a player in this space, because they see our stuff all the time. And, you know, it's again a lot of value added stuff, a lot of advice, you know, this is what you should be doing, this is what you shouldn't be doing, etc. So I think those two combined have put us in a really powerful place that, you know, when a senior leader from within our sector is looking at how do we build out our team, whatever the case may be, we are, again, stood in plain sight, and they already have a relationship with us through that community, and they've already got a bunch of value from being associated with us. So it probably just seems like a fairly obvious conversation to go and instigate that, you know, why wouldn't they, I guess, is the premise of it.
Awesome. Great answer, Kyle. And I wanted to recap on a few things that I took away from what you just said. One is the kind of domino effect, or maybe a better description would be the snowball effect of, you know, when you first start it, it's just a concept and you're getting people to buy into, but it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the more successful your podcast is, the better guests you attract, and then everyone wants to participate. So I think that's huge. And the second thing you said that I thought was really interesting is that this is like multi-dimensional. You're first and foremost, you said adding value to your ecosystem that you serve. And there's just so much goodwill that you generate, aside from the visibility and the positioning and being seen as an expert and a thought leader and everything else. It's not just that. It's that because you're giving so much value, people appreciate you, and it's almost like you have a relationship with them that goes beyond vendor and, you know, customer, right? And so I think that is huge, is that idea of first seeking to add value, And then the third thing that you mentioned is the idea that strategically you're inviting people on the show who, number one, are going to contribute and bring something, bring that value to your audience and that insight. But number two, so they're also influential. And so therefore, there's a sort of credibility that transfers to you because you're clearly have a relationship with that individual. And thirdly, some of those people are potentially you could do business with as well. And I like how you said it might be 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years, because it's a secondary objective, right? Your first objective is bring value to my audience. But secondary objective is build relationships with those people who you have on the show, because they could be referral sources or they could become clients themselves. But it's not like that might happen right away within the first couple of weeks, or it might take months or even a couple of years for that to come to fruition. What's your mechanism, Kyle, for seeking to, without being too salesy, but seeking to turn a podcast relationship into a commercial relationship?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, to be honest with you, that's probably something that we've not executed on all too well, if I'm being really, really candid with you, Mark. I think we were probably very fortunate the timing of the launch of our business, right? We probably hit the biggest boom in, recruitment history on that we may ever see again, right? So I think a lot of the visibility around our content marketing and kind of positioning ourselves front of mind, the relationships that we already had in place, the value added stuff that we were already doing and delivering, that put us in a really good spot. And, you know, our business model is slightly different to a traditional recruitment agency or search firm in that a lot of it is very kind of partnership model led. So it's often done at scale. So that could be working with a FTSE 100 that needs to hire 50 people over the next 12 months, or it could be, you know, a VC-backed startup that needs to hire 4 people over the next couple of months, but it's typically project-led or individual senior appointments, typically. And during that period of time, 21, 22, we were just having retained project after retained project after retained project walk through our door. Whilst that was great, we were also in a transitionary period as a business of going from, just me starting the business in my mother-in-law's back bedroom to trying to put process, frameworks, infrastructure, structure into the business. Yes, we absolutely capitalized on that period of time. And obviously, the work was inflowing very, very quickly, and in all honesty, probably more quickly than we were able to deliver on, which was why we had fairly significant rapid growth just to try and capitalize on that period of time. I guess the outside of that, the flip side of that now is that, when we came out of that big boom, we were probably in a position where I wished I'd have thought about the structure a little bit more carefully in terms of how do we leverage this great community that we've got, because we'd been in a place where we'd not need to pick up the phone and ask the question, right? Because there was so much work walking through our door on an inbound basis from new clients, right? We were a brand new business. So that was a great period of time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess structurally, that was probably one of my biggest learnings. I wish I'd have thought about what does the future state and structure of this business need to look like to leverage those relationships that we do have, right? And I guess, it sounds great for all intents and purposes that, you don't need to kind of go outbound to many people. And to be honest, we still don't, but that's something that we definitely should have addressed sooner. But I think to your point about, the time, I think that's a really big point to anyone listening to this. I see so many recruitment and staffing businesses, they go on this journey of trying to create communities, start events, start a podcast, and very quickly they stop because they don't see immediate ROI. And my message to anybody, I get asked about this on podcasts or at events all the time, but it's never an immediate ROI, right? Some of the biggest retained projects we've won, which have been worth, maybe £500,000 as an example, that came from a relationship that we had for 12 months. Right. And if we'd have stopped adding value to that person or that company or those people, that would have never come to fruition. So I think it's definitely value add first, build the relationships, and then you can prosper thereafter. And I think most people, they start and then because they don't see immediate returns, they just go back to the norm of, as you said, cold calling marketing candidates, things that they know.
Absolutely. Exactly. So, Kyle, I want to talk about this first. We will circle back to the idea of, okay, now you have a delivery issue and you have to scale. And then there's been some learnings that have come out of that, especially as the market has cooled in 2023. So we will get to that. But first, I just want people to really understand the power of this, because like it's pretty unheard of for a new business to like have that rapid growth and have all those meaty retained projects like inbound. That just doesn't happen. And so I think there's a couple of things to think about here. One is, often when people launch something like this, a podcast, it's very tentative. They dip their toe in the water and they say, well, I'll do one a month or something because I need to keep doing all this other stuff, the cold calling and the, you know, the outreach. And, but you obviously accelerated that process. Like how many podcasts were you publishing at the time? Like what was your sort of frequency?
So we kicked off the podcast and it went live weekly, and it's been going live weekly ever since. So we've just actually this week launched episode one of season four. So we do 50 episodes per season. So obviously that's taken us to 150 episodes. We actually crammed a few bonus episodes in there while we were getting the launch of season four ready. But yeah, I think consistency is absolutely key to this, right? And I think this is sometimes where I see organizations get it wrong, is as you say, they will dip their toe in if I've got time, because I've got, you know, I've got client calls to be making, or I've got other things to be doing. And the way I always looked at this, I have to see, right, you know, and again, I've probably been fortunate that I had almost a trial run of how this thing can work. So, you know, there was probably a few tweaks that I made when I did launch the business that, you know, I'd do this a bit better, or I'd do this way instead. But ultimately, you know, you can, when I'm, you know, speaking to potential guests as potential, you know, to come on the podcast, that's still speaking to clients. Right. So ultimately, what's the difference?
Exactly. Exactly.
What's the difference? And, you know, it's just right. it's the mechanism and of engagement, right?
Exactly. So, but I want people to get here, you know, as you said, like that, you want a £500,000 retained project, but it took, there's a lag time of building that relationship over time. But if you're doing 12 episodes a year versus you're doing 50 a year, right, the time to get to the ROI is a lot faster if you're doing 50 episodes a year, right? Because you have like 400% more chances of one of those relationships turning into, you know, a significant client. So moving on from the podcast then, how did that kind of grow into live events and then into you know, your mentorship and so on? Because as you've said, you've tried to really stay ahead of your competition and be the market leader. So could you like talk to us about how that evolved?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the events were what came first, obviously, in the previous role. When I started the business, we were in lockdown, right? So physical events probably, you know, wasn't gonna happen. So we kind of launched with the podcast fully on the premise that the events would return when lockdown kind of lifted. And I guess, you know, what has happened over time is the more successful the podcast has gone, the better the guests of the podcast. And then we could, once they're filtered into that community. So the way we view it internally is that anyone that's doing anything with us, and it spreads beyond just the events, the podcast or the mentorship. Now, you know, we do a lot of other stuff like guest articles and white papers where people will contribute towards that, like LinkedIn Live interview series around a specific sector or whatever the case may be. So anybody that's contributing in any capacity with us on, you know, one of those community related initiatives, we just view that as, this is our community. And, you know, obviously we try to add value to that. And obviously what you find is that there's certain people that will get involved with all aspects of it, right? You know, so there are people that come to the events, they have been a guest on the podcast, they are a mentor in our mentorship, they've done guest blogging with us, they've been on a LinkedIn Live with us, etc., etc. So there's, you know, not every community member is created equally. I think that's also something else to consider. But I think in terms of facilitating, how do you kind of stay ahead of the curve? Obviously, as soon as lockdown was lifted, we brought the events back. Obviously, the better the podcast has gotten, the better the guests have gotten, the better the events have become. And you know, we've had comments from people that are very active in the event space in our industry who have actually said that our events, in their opinion, are better than some of the events companies that put those big events on, right? Yeah, I was just going to say, in terms of, you know, the actual quality of person in the room, like the level of seniority, you know, being able to bring that's such a group of influential figures into one room together. You know, we've had comments that have said, you know, even X event company can't do that, as an example.
Amazing. What is the nature of these events? Like, what's the sort of format what's the format of those events?
So the events are kind of round table format. And to be honest with you, for a long time, we struggled with getting the balance right of being able to scale the events, because we very quickly got to a place where we had more demand than we could facilitate. So, you know, we had one or two options at that point in time. It was either, do we change the format? So move away from a round table and it become a panel or a conference or whatever the case may be, or do we just put on more events? Now, the community in of itself preferred the intimacy of the round table. So the way that works in reality is, you know, we, as someone that's very intertwined in the industry, I put out four or five different topics of things that I hear consistently around challenges, opportunities, whatever the case may be in the marketplace. I put that back to the community. They vote for which topic they want to speak about. And from there, you know, the top two topics win. So we have, you know, kick off the event, have one topic, break for food and drink, have the second topic. The events are chaired by people from industry. So we just play facilitator in all honesty. But we had a challenge scaling that, because we were having, you know, very counterintuitively for us, having some really great people, very influential people saying, I'd love to come to your event. And I was like, well, there's only so many people you can get around a round table, right? And what we can't be doing is kicking people out. So we've managed to get to a point now where for our London event in the UK, we've managed to scale that. So we have, you know, probably somewhere between 60 to 70 kind of chief data officers or people at that level come to the events every quarter, and we just have a bigger event space and more tables. So we might have 6 or 7 tables of 8 to 10 people per table. Everyone's discussing the same topic. Each table will have their own chairperson. We bring all that together at the end and kind of talk, you know, more holistically about what that table was discussing, any key themes that were coming out of it, and so on and so forth. And that's worked really well, because a lot of people like the intimacy of the round table discussion, but also being part of a bigger group from a networking perspective. So that's worked really well.
So that's brilliant. And I was going to ask, like, how many people works in a round table, and then how long are these events? How long is the event for?
Yeah, so the events, we run them for, well, I guess they're in the calendar for about 3 hours. So we normally run them 4 p.m. till 7 p.m. But obviously people stay around and network and have a few drinks thereafter. Again, you know, the round tables in that environment are normally, you know, 8 to 10 people per table, and we will have 6-7-ish tables. So that works really well.
And Kyle, do you charge people to attend the event? And or how do you manage the cost of something like that?
So yeah, no, I think this is the thing where we're getting to now. So we've never charged anybody for anything as part of our community, right? So it's something that we self-fund and always have self-funded and always will self-fund. So, you know, people don't pay to come to the events. People don't pay to come on the podcast. People don't pay to be part of the mentorship scheme. That's, you know, we absorb all of that cost. In all honesty, it pays for itself by the relationships that we create and the work that we win off the back of it. We're in a very fortunate position now, actually, where you know, we're having some fairly sizable organizations within our space pay us to sponsor those types of things, which again, there's a very fine line on that, getting the balance right so that, you know, you don't then start to become another event company where, you know, people are being sold to and it becomes a big vendor fest type of thing. But yeah, we're getting to the point now where we're exactly. able to make money off of that type of stuff as well.
Nice. Okay. I love it. And so you mentioned the London one where you might get 60 or 70 chief data officers. Do you do them in other cities?
Yeah.
As well?
So we do them obviously in Manchester where we're headquartered. That's obviously a smaller community of people at that level. We've done them out in the States. We've done them in certain parts in Europe as well. So yeah, the plan is to probably take them global on a more consistent basis. You know, we've trialed other locations to see if the appetite is the same, but I guess as with all of these things, it becomes easier to sell, position and facilitate because we now have something very tangible that we can show people, right? You know, we can show people pictures and video clips of the events that happen in London so they can see the size and the scale, and it's in a nice swanky room, and you know, you've got the CDOs of all these big name brands that come, so we can kind of show them this is what we're trying to recreate here, and that becomes a little bit easier. Whereas at the start, obviously, when I first started doing this, as we discussed, what you're selling is a concept of a potential future vision of what you think this might become, right? And you need one or two first movers to come with you to make that a reality.
Absolutely. No, that's awesome. So are you personally facilitating or hosting those events in all the other locations, Kyle, or is it team members, or are they, like, how do you orchestrate that when you're based in Manchester?
Yeah, so I do most of the hosting alongside my colleague, Kat, who's the kind of global head of brand for us. She actually comes from an event background, specifically within our industry sector. So to be honest with you, she joined the business at the start of this year, and she's been absolutely brilliant at kind of professionalizing a lot of what we were already doing, you know, I guess merely based on her experience and expertise in how you make that happen, but also in the fact that it's taken a lot of the time off of me, right? You know, because I was doing a lot of the facility, you know, everything from inviting the guests,
Amazing.
Pulling yeah. the topics together, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. Love it. And so what is the mentorship and how does that work then?
Yeah, so the mentorship program, again, that came from just a place where I'm continually looking at what is the next thing that we can do for this community that adds value, and how can we do something that also strategically aids the direction of the business. The mentorship, you know, is the third component of our community that sits under those three pillars of what we do of event, podcast and mentorship. And to be honest with you, that was just a gap that I spotted in the market where, and again, it's interesting because we contribute to both ends of these spectrums, which I'm about to kind of outline. But obviously at the senior end of the market, there's a lot that goes on. There's events, there's dinners, there's conferences, there's, you know, blah, 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 blah. A lot that happens for that crowd. Equally, there is a lot that goes on in universities and programs around that to help get more students into the data analytics arena, again, which we contribute to. So I do a lot of public speaking at universities to raise the profile of data analytics as a career, etc. But what we noticed is outside of the major kind of enterprises that have, you know, huge capability and financial resource to kind of facilitate graduate programs and, you know, career development plans and all of that type of stuff, most data analytics team in your average organization are actually fairly small, right? And what happens then is those people that come into that organization, they will quickly realize that my opportunity to develop and progress and upskill is completely at the mercy of how much time, effort and energy and resource and finances that this company is willing to put into me. And in many cases, there's just not enough of that to go around, right? So we work in a talent short market for sure. And the last thing we need is for people to be falling out of the industry because, you know, they can't see a way forward. So because we had such a network of influential people at the senior level, we just went to them with this concept of, you know, we think we can play facilitator here on this mentorship program where, you know, it's basically an opportunity for you to give back. But really the tagline of that is, you know, to develop and upskill the next generation of data leaders. So, and obviously what the people in the program, you know, they're probably early careers. So maybe 3 years plus that are looking to be mentored, we just bring them together, right? So all of the people that come to our events, all of the people that have been on our podcast, a lot of them are also mentors in our mentorship program. Again, we have all of this hosted on our website. So if anyone wants to go and have a look, you can see the types of people and brands that we have associated in that mentorship program. But we just play facilitator. So one thing I was very conscious of is not making it like an academy where there was a curriculum, because obviously then we have to start to manage what that looks like, and we start to kind of put people into boxes of this is what they want to learn or this is what they want to be mentored on. And we wanted it to be very much about them and that relationship with their mentor. So, you know, we do the pairing based on what this mentor and mentee want to get out of that relationship, you know, whether it's career advice, whether it's kind of technical upskilling, whether it's communication skills, whatever the case may be. We bring the pairing together and then we step back and get out of their way. And some people speak on a weekly basis, some people speak every, you know, two or three times a year. But we're about to launch the sixth cohort of that mentorship program, which will take us to about over 300 people involved, all told. So yeah.
That's interesting, Kyle. I honestly think you could charge for that. We have a client, Lauren Steibing, who is her business, LS International. So she has an executive search business in consumer goods, and she's launched another brand called Elevate, which is her mentorship program. Again, it's within four leaders within consumer goods, and the companies who. Like basically the companies pay for their employees to be mentored by another executive matched up with an executive who's more senior at another firm, still within consumer goods, but obviously not directly competing product lines. And that's been really successful for her, because something I know is what you're describing, you make it sound like a lot easier than it really is. Like the whole pairing of, yeah, like you've had 300 people who you've had to match up. That's a lot of work, right? And I don't know how you guys do it, but I'm sure there's a huge amount of work and thought that goes into that. Do you think you would spin that off into an actual revenue stream?
At this point, I'd probably say no. I mean, I think, look, we certainly could. And again, it's just like the podcast and the events, right? You know, we've gotten to a point now where there's, you know, people probably would be willing to pay to come on it. And we get a lot of PR companies come to us with, you know, can we pay to have one of our clients come on your podcast, right? That's not really what we do it for. It's more about the brand visibility and having that relationship. Because I think for us, in all honesty, what we can earn from, you know, charging for a mentorship program will be really insignificant in comparison to what we can earn off having that relationship with those people. And obviously what, you know, we're, again, think about the long game. Some of these people are, you know, 3, 5, 10 years into a career being mentored by someone significantly more senior than them. At some point in time, they will also be a decision maker, right? So I think that's our take on it.
Yeah.
Currently, you know, could we? I think we could. Would that put people off coming in? Potentially. But again, I think it's all good stuff in terms of being able to go and engage the right types of people, whether that be, you know, potential target clients or whether that be potential target candidates. We have mechanisms beyond just, I've got a job, are you interested? Or we're a recruitment company, can we work with you? Right. And I think that's really been the reason.
I get it. I get it. It's the long game. And those people, I mean, no question, 300, you've just created 300 brand ambassadors for Orbition, right? And so, you know, and as they develop in their careers, you're going to place them, or they're, you know, going to become hiring managers. And there's no way that if you play that correctly, that they're going to go to your competitors, right? You've kind of got those lifelong relationships now. Kyle, talk to me about how you were sort of forced to scale maybe quicker than you had planned because you had these like retained projects, and then what the learning from that has been, or what you feel like, the in retrospect, the mistakes have been that you're now recalibrating?
Yeah, 100%. So, as I said, we were at a place in time where we'd done a fairly good job of creating that community, adding a lot of value to it. The content marketing piece was almost fueling the fire even further around that. And we were having a lot of these retained projects walk through the door. Naturally, you know, at that point in time, we were, you know, less than a year old, right? So we had to grow by demand rather than design. And at that point in time, it was absolutely the right thing to do to capitalize on it. So, you know, and still very much to this day, I'm still very much the face of business development and sales and honing a lot of those client relationships. But what that meant was that, you know, when we got probably to the start of this year, I looked around the business and we'd gotten to kind of 13, 14 people. And there was myself, a couple of people from a content and marketing perspective, and then everybody else in delivery, right? And I'm sure it's probably a story that you've heard very frequently all year, Mark, right? You know, a lot of people were just trying to capitalize on that moment in time and probably don't regret doing so because it probably was the right thing to do. However, the learning out of the other side of that has been, you know, we got to the start of this year and actually the business wasn't then fit for purpose structurally for the market environment and conditions that we now have, right? And I think that's where I wish I'd have probably paid a little bit more attention to that earlier so that, you know, we obviously that boom was never going to last, you know, and I'm not too sure what it was like in other industry and markets, but in our industry, it was just insane. You know, salaries were hugely inflated. Anyone with a pulse was getting hired. You know, it was a time to kind of make hay while the sun was shining, right? But I guess that was never going to last. And I think we wish that we'd have thought more about this in terms of, well, when we come out of the other side of this and all of these retained projects aren't walking through our door at the scale or volume that they were, how do we go about leveraging this great community that we've built? Because we were, up until that point in time, at the mercy of whatever came knocking on our door, right? Which was a nice problem to have, that there was a lot of knocks at the door, but equally we'd not really set ourselves up structurally to say, well, you know, okay, when they're not knocking at the door as frequently, how do we go about leveraging that community from a sales perspective? And effectively, I became the bottleneck in the business, right? Because there's only so many mouths I could feed. During 2021 and 2022, that was significantly more mouth than it is now. So I think that's been the thing that I've learned. Do I regret it? No, because I think, you know, as a small business, we had to capitalize on that moment in time. But I wish I'd have probably paid more thought to, this is going to end at some point. And actually, when that does end, the business structurally won't be set up to kind of succeed in the market conditions that we will then have, which has been a large part of this year, is kind of restructuring that to get that right, I guess.
100%. It's interesting. You use the expression grow by demand rather than grow by design. I think I'd say the majority of recruitment businesses grow by demand, right? There's, oh, we're getting a lot of work from this client, so, you know, let's hire a recruiter to, you know, help us deliver to that account. And it's sort of like quite organic rather than by design, and where you're strategically thinking about, okay, here's the vision. This is where we want to get to. Let's reverse engineer that. How are we going to make that happen and be intentional about it? But, you know, obviously, you did very well out of those couple of years. It sounds like you've gone through some growing pains, which is normal. When was the moment in time this year when it was like that realization, okay, there's been a shift in the market and we have to adapt, and we're going to have to restructure internally. We're going to have to approach our business development a little differently, be maybe more proactive. What can you look back and pinpoint when that happened? And like,
yeah, I think it was probably getting towards the end of Q2, if I'm honest. And I'm still, you know, I'm a big believer, Mark, in, first of all, you've got to look inwardly, right, at were you doing the right things? I think it's very easy to say, oh, the market fell off a cliff. And obviously it did, in terms of the demand of the market and the pace of recruitment and the size of, you know, what comes through our door now on an inbound basis is vastly different to what was coming, you know, the pace of what was coming in and the size of what was coming in previously. But equally, I think because we'd not because we'd not focused on being set up for what would become a normal market, in quotation marks, right? I kind of feel that we're also responsible for that. And I think it was hard to actually pinpoint, is this a market thing, or is it just, you know, the market has normalized and we aren't set up now to operate as effectively as we were before because the market conditions have changed. So I think I was almost a little bit blindsided by that, is that I couldn't pinpoint, is it a market thing or is it an us thing? And I think it was probably a combination of the two, really. And I think the reality of the situation now is that we probably should have made decisions about restructuring in terms of the formation of the business, if you like, a lot sooner than we did, for sure. But again, I think that was probably down to maybe a bit of naivety on my part that, you know, not that the market was ever going to last like that forever, but, you know, was it a case of that it was an us thing, not an external thing? And I think, as I said, it's probably a combination of both, to be completely candid with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess at your sort of full peak, you were at 13 people. How many people
are on the team now? So we're back to 7 now, and I guess rehiring more strategically into different types of roles. We've gone through a bit of a process internally around kind of grouping certain types of roles together between delivery, kind of client partner type roles, and then kind of fresh new sales type roles. So we've gone through a bit of an exercise on that and are now kind of rehiring back into those roles.
Yep. And so is that the approach? It's kind of like a factory style model rather than a 360 model where you have people who are either delivery or sales, or like what other different roles available that you're
so
hiring
I think
in?
We've it's, you know, I personally think that the 180 model is the best for scale, given that the business model that we have, given it is project led. Because obviously, you know, we probably have fewer clients, but our relationships and the agreements that we have with them are much deeper, right? So it's not like what we don't get a lot of is ones and twos of hiring. It's, you know, the probably average size project that we get from your typical client is probably about 8 hires. And that could be we need 8 people right now, or it could be we need 8 people over the next 6-12 months. Obviously, some are really large in terms of a 40 to 50, almost like mini RPO type of model. Or then you have the single senior leadership type role. So we do a lot of partner hiring for consulting and advisory firms, or, you know, kind of chief data officer, VP director level, for which obviously are fewer and further between in terms of volume. So I think the 180 model serves us best for that. I think the reality of that model of the actual, you know, the team structure with the business model we have is that there can be peaks and troughs, right? And I think that is something that we've probably tried to get the balance right on, because, you know, all it takes is for us to win one or two big projects, and then I'm sat here thinking, okay, well, we need to hire more delivery people. Equally, then when those projects finish or fall off a cliff, if we're not replacing kind of almost in time, then you're like, okay, well, we've got a delivery team here now which is probably being underused because we're still waiting for something else to land. And in all honesty, you know, I'm still the person that's out there doing the bulk of the client work in terms of bringing these projects in. So it's not been too much of an issue in terms of, well, how do you split the roles and commission? Because, you know, obviously I don't pay myself commission. So I'll bring it in, I'll pass it to the delivery team. We have people internally within that delivery team now that are at the level that they can manage that client process. So I can focus more on just bringing new work in. But that's probably been a challenge, is that, you know, the diversification of business development for us has been a problem, in that, you know, and in all honesty, the challenge that we've had, Mark, and where we're up to with this now is looking at, well, how do we bring the types of people in with this skill set that we need? You know, we've tried to hire traditional recruiters in a 360 sense, who prefer the business development side of the role. And to be completely candid, a lot of them have struggled because it is a different model. You know, the sales cycle's longer, the amount of commitment is bigger, the actual the commercials around it are structured completely differently. So we found a lot of people that have come from a very traditional recruitment background have actually struggled because, you know, I guess it's a very different selling approach. It's obviously very solutions orientated, working backwards from a strategy, as opposed to, you know, give me a chance on sending some CVs for that job type of thing. So, yeah, I think they've been the key things.
Having said that, obviously, if you find someone who's got the talent and they, you know, the right mindset, then it is something you could
100%.
Teach someone to do, right?
We can certainly teach the people how to do that. And I think, in all honesty, I think it is a mindset thing more so than anything else, right? In terms of the model of how we work, because we are community led. That's a very different approach. You know, if you're approaching someone about, hey, you know, we host these events, we have this podcast, we have this mentorship, we do all of this value added stuff, are you interested in that? Of course they are. It's often the transition from, well, how do you take that from that conversation into learning about them, their business, what their pain points are, what they may need from a talent perspective over what period of time. Just someone that's got a lot of experience and been in the market for so long, like I have, I'd very naturally have that conversation just exactly like it is a conversation, right? For someone that's more junior that isn't used to that, they see this as a big build-up moment to, okay, when's the transition to the sales call, right? And it's like, it doesn't need to be like that. And I think that's the thing that we've found people struggle with, that is also quite hard to coach, because it's more of a mindset thing of you just having a chat with another human being, be curious and interested about them. You know, you're offering them a load of value. You're already building rapport through that mechanism, just have a chat with them and the rest will just come, right? But I think, yeah, that's been the challenge for most people is the mindset.
Yeah, no, I can totally get that, I guess. So that's the next chapter for Orbition is figuring out how to remove yourself as the bottleneck to growth from a, you know, business development and client acquisition point of view. Are there any other significant changes that you've made in order to guide your business through its next chapter?
No significant changes as of yet. We're getting a lot of interest from outside investment and other bigger recruitment organizations in terms of acquisition. So we're not closed off to that. You know, so there's some conversations going on there. Obviously, we're kind of looking around at, are there people out there at a more senior and strategic level that can help us through this next stage of growth and scale? But yeah, I think, you know, we're at a point in time at the minute where it's just get through the next, you know, few months to the start of the year and maintain the good run of form that we've currently got and then start hiring into those kind of key strategic hires to help take us to the next level. I think one thing that I think I'm fairly good at, Mark, is I'm very self-aware about what I'm good at, what I'm not, and where I think my time and efforts and skills are best served. So that's also kind of, you know, we're talking to people about that who, you know, we may think have a skill set that can complement mine in terms of more of the operational side of the business, probably.
Kyle, that's huge. And it's so important for leaders to be self-aware and recognize, I know that the number one thing that stops or slows entrepreneurs down in their growth trajectory is trying to do too much themselves rather than leverage other people's talent and focus on what they do best and let go of everything else. So, and definitely operations can be a key to unlocking further growth. If you have the right, you know, COO or operations director, that can be a game changer for
100%.
Sure. Kyle, listen, I've loved hearing your story. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your journey. And, let's do it again, maybe in a year or so, and you can tell me everything that you've learned.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back, Mark. Yeah, pleasure being here.
Thanks, Kyle. Awesome. Listen, have a great day, and congrats on your success so far.
Perfect.
Can't wait to see what happens next.